You came from where?
I'm from Portland.
Portland, Oregon.
Yes, sir.
Not Maine.
No.
That's a little too far.
We don't, yeah.
That's a little too far.
We don't speak of them.
Well, you got to. I didn't know. Is there like a Portland thing? Is there
There's
like.
There's not a rivalry as much as we're, I think, Portland, Oregon. I've never been to Portland, Maine, but Portland, Oregon has a bit of a self-esteem little brother complex about a lot of things, and they're acutely aware that the other Portland was the first Portland.
Oh.
And
so the. So Portland, Oregon feels like they're the little brother and the other one's the big brother?
I would just say they're acutely aware of it. Like, we're very aware of our place in the universe and we're constantly evaluating it.
So it sounds like a
probably not much different
insecurity.
Yeah, yeah. To some extent. I mean, the legend has it we were almost named Boston and there was just a couple white guys had a wager. And I guess in those times you could just name a city if you won the wager. And the guy from Portland, Maine won and beat the guy from Boston in whatever wager they had. And so we could have been like the shittier Boston, but as it turns out, we're the cooler Portland. So I'm told. that's where our options are.
Have you been to Boston?
I have not. I haven't been to much of the East Coast.
Well, because you said that you could have been the shittier Boston. I personally don't like Boston. I think you could have been the cooler Boston.
Yeah. Well, I'm talking as an insecure Portlander where we just assume, you know.
All your technology, you got notes. Look, I'm interviewing you. You're going to take notes?
I'm multimedia here. I got pen and paper and
all right.
The phone.
Well, you're here to talk about your own show, and I don't know why you would need notes, but that's fine. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Comedy Death Star, the podcast that digs into the dark side of comedy. I'm your host, Denzel Myers. My guest this week is writer-producer Joe Jatko.
Nice.
Here to talk about his short play. Oh, this is not right. This says The Importance of Being Oscar. But your play is called The High Captain.
Yes, sir.
Well, I'm going to scratch this out and put it right in.
It's all a
right.
Long play.
It is a long play? It's long?
It's 90 minutes.
90 minutes?
I'm finding as long for a fringe.
Well, we're not going to. Anyway, he's here to talk about his play, his long play. Did I say it was a short play?
I believe the Oscar.
Well, who cares about them? We're not talking about them today. Anyway,
yeah, anyway.
Joe's long play, The High Captain, is happening as part of the Hollywood Fringe Festival this June 2018. That's right now. We're going to chat about that and more in a moment. But first, a message from our corporate overlords. Comedy Death Star is a production of Actors Comedy Studio and ACSDigital.tv. I'm Denzel Myers. My guest today is writer-producer Joe Jatko. Hello and hello.
Hello.
I was saying hello to your writer personality and your producer personality.
Yes. Yeah. Dual roles.
They're dual.
Of course, before the first time we did the show, I was writer, director, producer, prop maker. Mm-hmm. There may not have been some child labor involved in the props.
Okay.
So that's actually cutting it down a little bit.
Are they your kids or thankfully. Somebody else's kids?
Somebody else's kids.
Oh, well, that's better. Yeah. Well, you can get arrested for that. I don't think you can get arrested if you have your own child laboring.
I didn't look into it too deeply. I just figured it was a plausible deniability.
Not anymore. Now you mentioned it.
That's true. Before I mentioned it,
plausible deniability. That was a phrase that was made famous in the Nixon era.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that one.
Along with involved but not implicated.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's I like that.
I like it when I'm trying to be evasive.
Yeah.
But no, I work with some very sweet children in Portland, Oregon, and they were nice enough to give me a hand making.
To help you out.
A couple of props for the play the first all first right. time around.
So I want to find out some things about The High Captain. First of all, it's at the Hobgoblin Playhouse, right? 6520 Hollywood Boulevard. I never heard about the Hobgoblin Playhouse. What is that?
It's super
there?
Fascinating history.
Yeah.
I believe it's recently been changed to the Hobgoblin Playhouse in advance of it being torn down forever.
Okay, it's going to be torn down.
So they did a quick rebrand and then tear down.
All right.
So but it's kind of it's interesting. Apparently it's 100 years old. I mean, it's right there on Hollywood. It's been dormant for some amount of time, and the great people at Stagecrafts, Jen and Greg, who are just been there since the beginning of Fringe, it's owned by the city and rented it out. and it's just the greatest little shoebox.
That sounds cool.
It's got all kinds of cool creative spaces.
Yeah.
It's got a backstage, which is nice, and you can like put things in it, which is very helpful. And
but it's going to be torn down at the end of the Fringe.
That's what we're told. That's kind of the romantic story. Okay. I mean, you know, probably the city will probably just hang on to it forever, longer, and then tear it down. But I'd like to think that our, you know, I think we're the last show in there. I'm pretty sure the last day of Fringe. I like to think, for dramatic purposes, that we're going to be walking out while like a wrecking ball comes in.
Yeah, well, that sounds good.
Walk
yeah,
away in
that's
slow
the way
motion.
I would. That's yeah. the way. I would want it. So, tell us about the show, The High Captain.
Sure. Yeah, in a nutshell, it's a group of grounded oil barge workers who have crash landed on a desert island and decide to consume the cargo of the barge by huffing it, and while doing so, decide to set up a government, hold an election, and various other administrative and governmental tasks, all while high on gas.
High on gas. So it's kind of like a Lord of the Flies, but
funny.
Different in a lot of ways. Yeah.
Much funnier than Lord of the Flies. I think I could. I don't want to toot our own horn, but.
Well, what's the HMS Pinafore? There's another classic musical about being in the high seas, and what is that? Gilbert and Sullivan. Gilbert and Sullivan play about being on the high seas, and
it's anyway. A musical?
Yeah.
Anyway. Oh, fantastic. It slipped on the radar. I actually don't, this is my first play, and actually this is all kind of new to me, and I'm not quite sure where it came from, other than just kind of the existential crisis that I was undergoing during the 2016 election. But I'm not, most of my references will be like Jurassic Park or just like pop movies. I don't have a lot of super sophisticated musical.
Yeah, I'm not a big Gilbert and Sullivan fan. I think I saw it recently. This is your first thing that you've written, and you did direct it before and produced it and all that. Why did you decide to write a play of all things?
You
could have baked a cake.
It was really weird. I mean, it was the 4th of July, 2015. When did the primary start? It was during the Republican primary,
yep.
Right about when they were kind of like, there was, you know, Marco Rubio and Trump were like on TV, like holding their hands out to indicate how big their penises were. I was like, yeah, I'm going to turn off the TV. And I'm going to go out on the deck, and it was like a beautiful summer day. It was the 4th of July, but I just wasn't, you know, the year before it had been this great ecstasy of just, I just lived in this just heathenistic hipster house in Portland. And I was just, you know, just so happy to be an American just a year prior for all these various reasons. And I have a real kind of patriotic streak in me. And that year, you know, if that's what our kind of country was coming to, I was like, I got to do something. So I just sat out on the deck, and I spent the 4th of July just thinking of the most insane thing I could kind of barf out just to make myself feel good. And it was a play.
And here you go. And here we are a couple of years later. Now, have you ever thought more seriously about forming your own government and maybe taking a small island and creating a rogue state?
Well, I think, I mean, I don't know if I quite have the charisma to pull off that kind of thing. It sounds kind of like Mosquito Coast kind of scenario.
Well, Gilligan's Island, but
they
didn't have an aspiration to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the new tagline for this version of the show is the 2016 election told by the only people in the world who had no idea what was happening. So I think they're, you know, they're forced by their circumstances in the context of the play to forge ahead with the limited resources and brain cells they have left. And
yes.
I think there's a kind of there's like an innocence to that I thought was really just a good thing to check in with. You know, just the ideals that we all kind of hold true, however. And we all, you know, believe in, you know, this country to some extent, and believe that it's worth preserving, and believe that it's, you know, worth having. But you got to check in with that once in a while, because these, you know, this moment in time we're going through, everybody goes through this on this island, and this short, you know, 90 minute play goes through, you know, their own battle of racism and, you know, isolation and, you know, authoritarian regimes. And everybody has to eventually face that. You know, do we all kind of figure it out as a society, or do we just like let one guy take care of it for better or worse? And I mean,
we kill each other? I mean, that's always an option.
Yeah. I mean, that's an option a lot of people go for.
Yeah. It seems to be more popular.
I tried to kill somebody off in the cast at one point, and there was a small rebellion on my hands.
From the actors or the characters?
Well, I mean, I wasn't going to kill an actor.
No, you're going to kill off a character.
But I mean, it would have prevented me from having to cast one more role. And I said, well, why don't we just kill this character? And that didn't go over so well.
They needed him. They liked him.
Yeah.
Now, what are there? Tell us about. There must be some types at work, right? Within this group, there are different kinds of types of people. Yeah. What are the kind of conflicting forces that are attacking each other?
Yeah. So we have. I mean, I've been happy that not everybody. I think we have a good mix between, and we definitely have a. It felt not like the right thing to do to have. I mean, I really wanted the feminine kind of masculine face off, you know, and just to kind of invoke the election that we just had, but also, you know, kind of make those characters live on their own. So the two leads are, you know, kind of the authoritative male character, and then the more kind of, I don't know, you know, it skews the left pretty hard as well. So there's the left is, she's a very kind of, you know, I think there's a line that says we're all opinions are valued no matter how asinine, and all freedoms are made available no matter what consequences, foreseen or unforeseen, which is kind of the other side of that spectrum, right? Well, it's, you know, just mob rule with compassion, you know, but does that, not necessarily doesn't society make either.
No, you can take any good idea too far.
Exactly.
Yeah, and so there are pitfalls all over the place.
So we need structure, but how far, and then, you know, so those are kind of the main characters, but it's a true ensemble, and everybody kind of has their pep squad and, you know, kind of bodyguards and stuff, and so, and then, there's...
And how many people in the cast?
We have eight.
Eight?
Okay. Yeah.
And all these people have come from Portland with you, or any of them from Los Angeles?
These folks are all local Los Angeles actors.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so entirely new cast, new director, as I mentioned, Eric Sire.
Okay. And so, you got them all started from Portland, right?
I mean, I got him started.
Yeah.
And I even was about to send him a couple actors, and he said, no, these guys are too good. Like, I got this thing.
All right.
Dialed.
Yeah. So how's that feel for you? Now you wrote the thing, you had been a part of the production in Portland, and you got a bunch of people in LA working on it, and you're not even here to see it. How was that for you?
Yeah, it's kind of, I was thinking about this today, it's kind of like, you know, in the movies when I don't have children myself, but they put the baby, after you have the baby, behind some plexiglass.
Yeah.
And then the mother and father look adoringly at the baby.
Yes.
Which is on the other side is like an incubation chamber of some kind.
I'm not sure they do that anymore, but
okay, but just any episode of any sitcom,
absolutely. Yeah.
There's that scenario.
Yes.
I don't know what the medical advantage to that, the germs, I don't know. I digress. But I'm just kind of, and then you're looking at your baby, and there's this, you know, this nurse kind of petting its head, and she's very nice. But I mean, if she just goes by and pokes your baby in the eye, I mean, there's no real repercussions for you. I mean, you're
not really. You're on the other side of the glass.
Yeah. So it's a vulnerable position, and just these relationships that you form through these kind of endeavors are just so fascinating. And I mean, you rely on people with such a deep part of your soul. It's a really profound form of collaboration.
And how did you find Eric? Did you know him before? You found him? Yeah, how did you find him? A director in Los Angeles or someplace else?
He's a local director. Mm-hmm. He's worked a lot with Theater Unleash, who I met him through. So Jen Crafts, who runs Theater Unleashed, is who runs Stage Crafts, and I think subsidiary, yep. something, something. But anyway, I mean, she's just kind of the, like, one of the fringe people who's been there from the beginning. She's got all the right advice, and she recommended him.
All right. So, yeah. Okay. And so far, so good. I guess yeah. you'll find out.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, we're...
You got here a week ago, so you must have seen the rehearsal now.
I sat through.
It's not like you just arrived and you're like, oh God.
I've been here a little while. Yeah. But it is, I mean, it's very bizarre, to be honest with you. I mean, it's a completely different take on it. And I saw I went to my first official fringe show last night. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a little instructive that there's a specific sense of humor that people respond to here that, that I think Eric's tapping into. So it's just the nature of jokes is so, you realize you write a joke and you're like, yeah, that's funny. And then somebody else can like almost write an entirely different joke without changing the words.
Right.
That has an entirely different meaning. That's also funny. And so it's the nature of comedy is really strange. I mean, I don't even consider myself a funny person.
No, you're not being funny here today.
Yeah, I had to practice. I was actually all my anecdotes I'd come up with. I was leaving, and my girlfriend who came here with me, she said, "Don't tell that one. Don't tell that one." apparently they were all too edgy. So I'm off the cuff now. Yeah.
What's the edgy now? I want the edgy thing. Come on, you could be edgy here.
I meant to actually screen this with you, and I don't think it's that offensive. But I think whenever white people talk about it's a race, and that's actually what we do in the play. So I thought it was very apropos.
Yeah, let's hear it.
I mentioned these young people I work with; they're anywhere from 5 to 10, and I was telling them, I was telling them about your podcast, and they were asking me, I had to leave town, and they were asking me where I was going, and I said I'm doing this, and it's really fun. Do you guys know about podcasts? And they're like, yeah. And I was like, I'm going on this podcast and it's called a Comedy Death Star. And they're like, cool. And then they're like, all right, we're going to download. I mean, they all got their shit. They got their devices,
They know it more than you.
Yeah. So, I mean, and then I'm like, I remember I was like, yeah, I was listening to it. And I was like, they swear a lot on that show. And I was like, I can't be recommending that. So I just told him that. I was like, all right, well, check it out with your folks first. Because, sometimes there's bad language. And they're like, well, you're not going to say any bad language, are you? And I was like, I don't think so. But,
all right, well, we won't have to.
Yeah.
We don't have to do any. We haven't used any bad language so far, have we?
But then they say to me, I was like, well, yeah, I probably won't. But you never know. Proceed with caution, and they were like, so what kind of bad language? I was like, I don't know, just the normal ones. And they're like the N-word. And I was like, no, I'm not going to.
We're not going to say that.
Drop the N-word. Yeah, I mean, so.
I don't think we have any reason to.
But, and this is like an 8-year-old kid, and that, yeah, I don't believe we have any reason to whatsoever, but I thought.
That's what they think is bad language.
But it is. I mean, it's just like, yeah, it's just, that's beyond.
Yeah.
Bad. Yeah, so.
That's an edgy story. All right.
Yeah.
That's not that edgy. Well, so we're not gonna.
We're from Portland. We're very thin-skinned about I'm still trying to tough it up.
You got any other little brother complex? What about Seattle? Do you feel like you're always?
It's pretty competitive. I mean, nobody's. I don't know. I mean, it takes place in the form of like soccer is the main thing they're competitive about. So yeah. I don't know if that's particularly. I mean, we've never actually fought them in any way, but we talk about it a lot. I think there is a little brother complex to Seattle. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, all right. The High Captain, part of the Hollywood Fringe Festival, the Hobgoblin Playhouse, 6520 Hollywood Boulevard. Go see the show. Check it out. HollywoodFringe.org for
Please.
Tickets.
5226.
That's the slash show number, 26. Yeah, okay. Well, if they remember the High Captain, they don't. That's easier than the number.
That is easier.
You never know. Here are some other questions. How old were you when you first ran away from home?
I was pretty young. I want to say like maybe less than kindergarten.
Really?
I struck out. I grew up in Boulder, Colorado, which is not a farming town. However, we lived on a farm.
Yeah, there are farms really right outside.
There's like several, like three farms, and we were on one of them. And, so you just, you live on a farm, you just let your kids just wander all over, nothing too terrible is going to happen. So, yeah, I ran away for a good 45 minutes. came back, told my dad all about it.
Were you upset, or you just wanted to go out and see the world? I mean, what do you remember from that moment?
I mean, I actually told a lot of creative lies about what had happened, and I remember thinking, like, yeah, you can really pull some over on these guys. Like, I remember describing, like, a secret clubhouse I'd come upon, and there was, like, an underground network of other rogue children who had taken me in for 45 minutes, and I think, yeah, kids just say stuff, and parents are just like, yeah, all right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you're starting to get in. My next question was, sure. When you were a child, you had an imaginary friend. But maybe these were some of these road kids. Did you have an imaginary friend?
Man, road kids, yeah. I haven't thought about them in a while. That was about it. I think I was enough to handle already. I didn't need to throw any other curveballs at my...
So now I'm seeing the road kids. You said they had an underground bunker or tunnel somewhere?
It's kind of like, did you ever see Demolition Man with Sylvester Stallone and Wesley Snipes?
Yeah,
it's
but
maybe the best bad movie ever made. I mean, it is
a long time ago.
Profoundly good and bad.
Yeah.
Anyway, at some point, Stallone enters. He's awoken, frozen to hunt down Wesley Snipes in this futuristic dystopia where Taco Bell is the only restaurant, and he gets fed up with the political correctness of the future and how perfect it is and how crime-free it is. And he eventually gets taken in by a group of underground sewer dwellers who are led, of course, by Dennis Leary, the charismatic underground sewer leader. These so it's kind of like that. I mean, I don't know if...
They've been pushed underground because they're not acceptable to society.
I don't remember if there's any Bostonian accents down there, but in the cave. But well, I mean,
Dennis Leary's from Boston, right?
I believe so.
Yeah.
But I don't know if one of these kids had made it all the way to Colorado from Boston to leave this underground. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know much about him. I haven't thought about it till now in about 25 years.
That's good. Now, you have a somewhat quirky sleeping or bedtime ritual. What is it?
I do? Was that a statement question?
Well, it's both. That's how I ask a question.
I do. I'm a terrible sleeper, so it varies night to night what's going to knock me out. I usually have to try 3 or 4 things.
Ether, mallet to the head, warm milk, cats.
I haven't tried warm milk. Cats?
I don't know. I just said that. All right. That's not a good question.
I haven't tried cats yet.
That's not a good question for you. We're going to move on. If you listen to this podcast at all, you know, I have a special question every week and a different sponsor every week for the question.
Oh.
So I like to give a shout out to the sponsor first. So let's do that. The sponsor for my special question this week is the United Nations Security Council. The 5 permanent members of China, France, Russia, the UK, and the United States. By the way,
is an advertisement?
Well, this is the sponsor of the show. Yeah. This is me just adding, you know, they are the 5 permanent members because they were allies in World War II, and together they won, and so that's why they formed this group. Yeah,
they advertise on podcasts?
Well, I'm just saying, at the end of World War II, well, they have a message. Their message from the United Nations Security Council, 5 permanent members, are, please don't drink and use nuclear weapons.
Oh.
So it's a public service.
Keep that in mind.
Public service announcement from China, France, Russia, the UK, and the United States. Yeah, please don't drink and use nuclear weapons. So, the question is this thing. You may have heard, I've been doing this thing for a while, where I've invited some family and friends to hit me in the face with a pie or squirt seltzer.
I have heard
anytime.
All of
this. Yeah. Yes. And the reason I've done it is that it's something that people always want to do because it makes them happy, but they're never allowed to do it, so it's forbidden. So it becomes even more kind of juicy.
Depraved.
And so, or depraved. So I figured if I really wanted to make people happy, I could give them permission to do this thing, and then they can do it anytime.
Uh-huh.
And it's happened a whole bunch of times under different circumstances. And the question is this. You're going to do this. You're going to give permission to one person.
Again, I don't think that's a question.
This is the question. You're going to give permission to one person, living or dead, real and imaginary, anybody you want who's going to hit you in the face with a pie. Who would you like to throw this pie?
Yeah, remember, I should have primed for this one.
No, it's better to have the first thing that comes to mind. Look, they're not going to throw in anger. You said it's okay.
Yeah.
They're going to throw it with love. You're going to receive it with love. Yeah, what comes out? receiving
who
a pie.
Who would need it?
Who would just make their day to hit me with a pie? So
make your day.
So like an enemy that I secretly respect, maybe?
That's possible.
So somebody, I mean, I know they would wish me ill, but I also kind of secretly think they're cool and would like them to enjoy that.
Do you know who that person is? Somebody you would like to meet?
I had a collaborator who, in Portland, when I first came up with this play, who was such a great help until she wasn't and kind of left me in the lurch the first time we were doing it. And, you know, she was such a help, and like, I didn't know anything about directing, and she really primed me up. I probably shouldn't say her name on the air. She's already mad enough, but
feels unresolved.
Yeah, but I respect people who don't like me. Like, I respect people who I piss off. Mm-hmm. You know, like I respect that where she was coming from on that.
So there were some kind of creative disagreements, or you know.
Yeah, I mean, it was a situation where it's right. Like the cliches about, you know, relationships and things like that are correct. You know, it's just like you can't. Can't control having feelings for people.
Yeah, yeah. So in that case, then, you know, here's what I'm hearing. You had some kind of relationship with somebody. It ended in a weird, uncomfortable way that sounds like it was not really satisfying for either one of you. Things were good up until a certain moment, so it's unresolved. Maybe that would help kind of clear or reset everything, and if she hits you in the face with a pie.
Yeah, and again, this making plays, making art is just so intense, and I don't begrudge anybody for any. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'd like to think I'm easy to work with, but you know, I don't begrudge anybody for any problems they have, because you know, I know how much is, you know, of your heart and soul you put into those things. So
well, and sometimes maybe you could be a dick. I hope so.
She would say that, yeah.
I mean, I think it's fine. Everybody's got to be a dick sometimes.
Los Angeles, I got to say, is bringing out my inner dick side. I mean, it's like, it's almost like the driving here is
really?
Just... Yeah, I mean, it's like, kind of like it. Like, it's kind of...
You like it?
It's, you know, because nobody, if you do something bad, I haven't, you know, everyone else is doing bad things too out there.
So...
You know, you're surviving, you know, it's like...
Yeah, in Portland, if you cut somebody off, you have to apologize.
Oh, you'd have... Yeah, you'd basically have to go to group therapy.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you know.
And here, it's like, oh, I'll cut that out part because the kids.
Yeah, no, we gotta.
Yeah. But here, you know, you do bad things on the highway, it's,
yeah.
So you're getting a sense of freedom.
Exactly. And I think that's why we drive so fast, is because when you get out of the traffic, you just want to go like 100 because it's great. You never get to go more than 5, you know? And so I just drove home from rehearsal, you know, it was the middle of the night. We went late and I was just like, I've never felt so free just to
drive it 100 miles an hour.
Yeah. It's like Kanye going and the windows open. I was just like in a rental car.
Zoom.
Yeah. It just doesn't.
All right. Well then I'm very glad actually that, we get this guy, bring him down from Portland, Oregon, and we are helping you kind of loosen up and not be so nice and so considerate to all these, you know, worry about hurting feelings of people in Oregon.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I actually had to stop driving. I got rid of my car a few years ago just because it, you know, it was just so infuriating, the niceness out there. You could never really get anywhere, you know, and so...
Everyone stops. They let the other people go first. They drive slowly. They stay in their own lane. They use their turn signals. Irritating.
Very. Yeah. And I mean, well, because there's a, you know, it's just like any kind of nice gesture. Like if you take it again too far, you know, if you decide to stop for a pedestrian on a 5-lane boulevard. And then I'm coming down because I drive on the light rail tracks when I drive in Portland because nobody drives on them because they're afraid and it's raining. But there's light rail tracks everywhere, so you can just go down any street and just drive on the light rail tracks. And it's a little dicey, but you know, you keep it together. And so this one time, I still live on Grand Avenue, a very big street in Portland, and 4 lanes of traffic had decided from the goodness of their hearts to stop for this nice woman who was crossing the street during rush hour. not at a crosswalk like she could have been, and I almost murdered her because I'm in the lane that's moving. I haven't been briefed on the niceness party that's happening ahead of me, and we, you know, someone almost lost their life.
Yeah, but so not in a crosswalk. Now, you know? Not in a crosswalk.
No.
Well, see, then I would say organized. That's not your fault.
Lawless niceness.
Yeah, yeah, that's terrible.
There's no place for that.
Organized, lawless, niceness. Yeah, that sounds dangerous.
I mean, the first time I got on Hollywood Boulevard here, I almost had a panic attack. It was there's so many things going on. I mean, it's society of laws even out there, right? I mean, there's like a family with two baby carriages, and they were leaving me at risk in the middle of an intersection. And I mean, no matter, you know, I'm not going to hit a baby, but like, they were breaking the law, you know.
Yeah,
I mean,
get out of the way.
Objectively,
if
we live in a society of laws,
they you need to run them over.
I was in the right. I mean, technically, not right. Morally.
No, but technically, yeah, I think that's true. Now, we have the option because we know we've talked about all this stuff. If you would like to either say this woman's name, or you can. Here's the other option. You can give me. I can tag her when we put this up on Facebook and Instagram, and we can just tag her social media thing, and then she could listen, and she would know that it is always available. Or
I should have picked somebody dead.
No. You have another option. There's no pressure. Here's the other option. The other option is you can give her this card.
Oh, so now I have to actually extend this offer to her.
No, you don't
I thought
have
this
to.
Was
no, it's totally
theoretical.
An option. It's
okay.
Totally an option, but you can. It's not that theoretical. Read what's on the back of there.
All right. Pie yourself free. It's always okay to hit me in the face with a pie or squirt seltzer anytime without warning. Pass this card along to friends and family. Experience the sublime service in receiving a pie with love and joy in your heart. That's very nice. That's a very sweet anecdote about that as well, that you... not to rehash an old episode, but that you decided that was a way to put some happiness into the world.
Yeah.
Several years ago. Is that the...
Yeah.
Am I getting
well,
that right?
Like 20 years ago. And so I have been hit with pies many times. Most of the time in fun. But, you know, sometimes people were mad.
A little extra mustard on there.
People were mad, and this was a way, like you're saying in your situation, perhaps it was a way for them to let me know that they were unhappy in a way that I couldn't defend myself because I said it's okay. And it helped. It really did.
Yeah. It reminds me of a story. Our productions, it's kind of been a sad story. We've had several tragedies strike this production. And this, your story reminds me of a story when I was a kid. One of my best friend's mom died of cancer, and they told me that afternoon, you know, I just asked, you know, what did you do that day? And they said, we went to the store and we got a bunch of pie shells and we filled them up with whipped cream and we had a huge pie fight in the backyard the day their mother died.
Just to release some of the tension. Or
I just thought it was such a beautiful thing. Yeah. Like yours, yeah. Like just, I mean, they just, yeah, I don't know how it's one of those things that doesn't make sense to do, but because of that, I mean, nonsense is so therapeutic. I mean, that's kind of the heart of this play as well. It's just like nonsense is like in nonsense times, you got to respond with nonsense. You know, nonsense is very profound.
Yeah, I agree. Well, we're getting towards the end. There's one last thing that I like to do on this show, which is to anagram stuff. And anagrams, where you take the letters of a word or phrase and you rearrange them to see if it spells other things.
Sure.
And then you see, you know, if that seems interesting or useful or entertaining in any way. So I'm going to tell you, I tried to anagram your name.
Good luck.
Joe Jatko. I got nothing.
Like, I love your pronunciation. I mean, that's sharp. I mean, a lot of people drop the T, or, I mean, you got...
They're all in there. I'm trying to... What kind of name is it?
It's... We're still figuring that out. I mean, the last I heard it was Czech, and so I was actually in Europe last year and went to the Czech Republic and hung out, and I was like, all right, this is it. And I got back, and my father was like, oh, yeah, how is Slovakia? Because they broke up the country in, like, the 80s or whenever they decided to do it, and apparently from the Slovakian side, nobody had had filled me in on that. So I was having a lot of profound moments with people who weren't.
Did you go to Prague?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I was in Prague. I mean,
it's Prague. Prague's cool.
I can't complain that I ended up in
Prague. No, Prague's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, everybody's like, yeah. Everybody in Europe is, they're mean in the way that I like it.
What do you mean? The Europeans are mean? What do you mean?
Well, they're just like, I mean, Czech Republic was my favorite because they're, you know, I mean, just, it's tougher to live in some of those places than here. And they got their, they're just like sarcastic, I think, is more.
Okay.
They have a national language of sarcasm.
Okay.
And as a smart ass myself, it was so wonderful.
All right.
Just
see.
Like having somebody just like fake hate you just for sitting down in their restaurant and like ordering, you know, right, a glass of water or something.
Alright, well, I think you're going to be leaving Portland at some point because you come in here, you're enjoying the traffic, you're going to Prague and you enjoy the sarcasm. So
yeah, you gotta keep your edge to yourself in Portland.
Yeah. So. Now, so I anagrammed some stuff and, you know, the thing is to see if this illumines what we have. So here, the High Captain, anagrams to this, read that one.
Seriously?
Yeah, read it.
Cheap taint high.
Yeah, cheap taint high. Is that
relate
to the High Captain in any way?
I'm sure it does. I mean, it's actually been interesting. Both casts have. I mean, I wrote this the most innocent possible way I could, just kind of like a wide-eyed child, and watching these people just try to endlessly sexualize it has been really entertaining. And so you'd have to almost ask the cast because they have found so many dirty little things in it that I couldn't even imagine having come up with.
Well, I figured if they're huffing petroleum products, that huffing someone's underwear is just a step away.
Ooh.
Right?
Hence the taint.
Cheap taint high.
Cheap taint.
Yeah.
None of that fancy.
No.
Fancy taint.
No.
I got time for that pretentious crap.
No, pretentious. Now, here's another one. I thought this must make some sense. Read that one.
Chap half ignite.
Chap half ignite.
That's kind of epic.
How epic how? What it has?
Half ignite. Well, the two-thirds of it are epic. I don't know about chap. It just sounds like a little dry. But half ignite.
Yeah, I figured they're working with petroleum products. Somebody may catch on fire at some point, right?
Yeah. Ideally, the show would have a good amount of pyrotechnics, actually.
That's one way to get rid of that.
There is. God, I feel like we haven't actually talked about the play much, but there is like a one of their national symbols is called the Everlighted Flame, which is just a constant burning petroleum barrel with just a flame coming out of it because they're so rich with oil that they just burn it 24 hours a day, and that adds to the when you're just inhaling burning gas, that adds to their inebriated state. So.
All right, so chap
half ignite.
Chap half ignite.
Yeah,
there's a
Shakespearean.
Well, but there's a everlasting flame as part of the play.
Exactly.
Right. I'm part of new nation. So that seems... All right, so...
I like that one.
All right.
It's better than the taint one, I gotta say.
Cheap taint high?
Cheap taint
high.
Well,
that's okay. I'm reaching all for all of these. Like, here's one that
It's a very highbrow play about people having gas.
A little high, a little low.
Yeah. Just keep it classy.
Now, here's something that I wasn't sure if this would make any sense. Read this one right here.
Shuffling...
Ilk.
Ilk.
Yeah, huffing kills. Because they do. They do some huffing of gasoline fumes, right?
Are we on huffing kills or...
Well, but this is a thing that rarely happens in the show, right?
Oh, huffing kills. We got a new word here.
Okay. Yeah, they huff fumes.
Shuffling ilk.
Shuffling ilk.
What's the Oxford English Dictionary definition of ilk these days?
Well, I don't know.
I feel like that's a word Oxford. I knew in college, and then those of your ilk.
Yeah, I think it's of your kind. It's a
shuffling
cohort
ilk.
Of some sort.
Man, it's almost like Tolstoy or something, like the bees of Moscow.
Did he write anything
War
about
and
the
Peace?
Bees?
No, but just like just the. I mean, that sounds like a very derisive term for the great unwashed masses.
The shuffling ilk.
We have a very. Arch villain in our play, mm-hmm. which I'm very proud of because I feel like mm-hmm. villains are all complex now and sympathetic and all that.
Yeah.
And there's shades, But he's bad. He's a bad guy. And racist. Not like me.
Racist in a different way than you're racist.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Like no, well, no, I mean, I'm not racist.
Oh, well, sure.
I would, you know, like...
Everybody says
we all say that.
Of course.
He's more... Yeah.
Does he say he's not racist?
I'm only... I mean, it's... Yeah, yeah. He's very overtly racist, and I think...
But does he deny it the way you're denying it right now?
Wow. Pressure's on.
It's just a simple yes, you know, or no.
No,
question,
I mean,
Joe.
They invent racism. And again, it's like one of those things that it every society has to deal with. It's just like, can we all look different in this society? And apparently we got to figure that out again and again. And so, again, I'm just positing that these guys would face that. And and this guy is the embodiment of, you know, he's the Trumpian figure in the play, and he's the guy who brings it to the forefront. And I think, you don't know racism is terrible until you suffer the consequences. Because at first it just seems smart. He's just like, well, you know, this guy looks different, so he's probably got something up his sleeve. And then you're like, oh, but this has all these other unintended consequences, and it's best to just be nice. Ultimately,
says the guy from Portland. I'm pretty sure my last question was about your own racism, which you have dodged, but that's okay. Everybody's got a little something.
I figure if an 8-year-old said it, it can only be so controversial, but.
All right, here's one last word. I anagrammed democracy, and I got this.
Oh, cry me a cod.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Oh, I wasn't sure how that...
Cry me a cod.
What does that sound like to you?
What boy band? Was it Timberlake solo? Cry me a river?
Well, there is a saying about cry me a river.
Yeah, I guess that is pre-Timberlake.
Well, yeah. He may have made a song about it.
Yeah.
But cry me a cod.
Cry me a cod.
I had an idea about this, but I don't remember what it was. Like when I thought it, when I saw it, I made a connection. My brain just made a connection, but now it's lost.
Yeah, I mean they're in the ocean. I think is cod more of a, it's more of like a river.
It used to be the North Atlantic was full of cod.
So
probably an ocean the fish. North Pacific, yeah.
So that, I mean, that's apropos.
It's an ocean,
on an island.
Ocean fish.
They in the play they have made sure to flood the oceans with oil in their immediate vicinity to clear the reefs around them of shore life, so they have a safe place to swim and recreate.
Doesn't that kill their food? What do they eat on this island?
They eat...
Do they eat?
There's some amount of debate about that. They eat... Well, so Xana, the kind of our heroine, is also a little bit off, and she's off in her own entire way that I kind of wanted to... You know, she kind of represents the sins of the left, and she, to symbolize that, she has started eating poisonous berries and has acquired a what she refers to as the demon. So she has like gotten a tummy ache that mixed with gas has enforced that she is indeed living with a demon inside her that compels her to do these kind of terrible, not terrible, but she, you know, she. She loses it for a good couple acts and
does some terrible things.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
So it's just, I mean, is it better to feast on the berries that will cause you to be insane, or is it better, or famine? This is the question.
Or die. Sorry. Well, these are the deep questions that we have begun to examine in the play. So cry me a cod, democracy. I don't know why I wrote that one down. I have no idea.
No, democracy is certainly at the heart of the issue.
Yeah.
It's a very hard concept to carry out when you actually try to make it work, even in the context of a play, so.
Yeah. That, I mean, it's a democratic process, one where people get to participate, right?
Well...
I mean, you could have any form of government or any kind of decisions you want. If people are involved together, that's a democratic form.
And I think, you know, I think this is, again, something that every government or society has to face at one point. There's a quote from the play that says, okay, tomorrow we'll have a vote. This is about excluding the person who looks differently than everyone else, and they're just going to put it up to a, you know, vote, and just good old racist vote. And the Thon, who's our villain, we come to find out, asks, well, how many votes do we need to not have a vote? As many politicians have asked in a many variety of ways over the over time, and so that's, you know, it's like wishing for more wishes. You know, it's yeah. There's a lot of pitfalls and loopholes.
Yeah. Yeah, all right. Well, it sounds good. We're pretty much out of time. I would like to thank my guest, the writer-producer, Joe Jatko. Go see his play, The High Captain, at the Hollywood Fringe Festival. Tickets for tickets, you can go to hollywoodfringe.org. What's the number of the show again? You said it,
5-something.
5226.
I might have been
It's at the Hobgoblin Playhouse, 6520 Hollywood Boulevard here in Hollywood. If you would like to buy a Comedy Death Star coffee mug, this is what they look like. You can email me.
Those are dope.
Right? ComedyDeathStar@acsdigital.tv. The guy from Portland said they were dope.
So I can attest to that.
That's pretty good, yeah. Our theme music was written and performed by Dean Mermel. You have been listening to Comedy Death Star, the official podcast of Actors Comedy Studio right here in Hollywood, USA. I'm your host, Denzel Myers. Thanks for listening. We'll be back sooner or later. Joe, thanks for coming in.
Thanks so much for having me. Yeah. Really appreciate it.